This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to a special Thursday morning edition of Draft Sickos, technically Wednesday night. I'm so flustered, I don't even know what day it is. I'm your host, Maxwell Baumbach, and I'm joined by the real star of the show, Stephen Gillespie. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Maxwell, I'm awesome. It's weird to record so early in the week, but You know, it's fun. You know, we still got our full weekend ahead of us, I'm going to have so much time on my hands, I might write an extra article. Who knows?
Nice.
I am doing okay. I'm incredibly sore. I know I texted you like on the side that yesterday was going to be my day one back in the gym after a pretty long hiatus. I'll put it like that. Dad life has been pretty hard, but I'm on leave and I got extra time. So I went to the gym day one. I did some treadmill. I did some free weights and stuff like that. And then I went back today and I didn't text you this.
Okay.
So this is
how was day two?
So day two, I was like, I'm going to go ahead and get my cardio in with a little bit of basketball. So I went and grabbed a ball. I was putting some shots up. It was around lunchtime. So there were a lot of people coming in, I think, like during their work break and stuff like that. And then we started getting like 10 or 12 people in there. I was like, oh, snap. Like my 34-year-old butt might have to run some 5v5. So got picked up by the first team. And we won that game. We kept doing that like over and over and over again. So we won four in a row.
Nice.
And I ran my fifth 5v5 and dude was like trying to do too much with the ball, turned it over it was a very frustrating way to go out. But I did contribute. I did feel good being out there with a bunch of 20-year-olds, but man, I am sore. My first day playing like real basketball, I did like five straight 5v5 full court. I was winded.
Basketball sore is like a different variety of sore. Because, like, I feel like I was gymming it up so hard with my home gym setup during COVID. And then, like, once things subsided, I remember, like, playing pickup for the first time. And, like, my ankles were cooked for, like, 2 weeks. Like, I was in searing pain for a long time. Great question, first off, from Gregory Castillo. Need your player comp. I'll lead with mine because I was actually asked this recently. All right. So in my like actual playing days of like high school, middle school, prior to that, Omer Asik was always the guy where I was like, that's kind of what I played like. Now I'm more Boris Diaw. Now that like a lot of the guys my age are like a little more out of shape, I get to dribble more. I'm more the Boris Diaw, like early career Boris Diaw, because I can't shoot at all. My jumper's broken. I was telling the other day. I shot around the other day. Like I need to completely rework my jumper.
Mine's kind of wet. I'm not gonna lie. I would say mine is like a mashup between Kyle Anderson and Boris Diaw.
Okay.
Because not the fastest guy on the court, but I do have a little bit of a handle. I can space the floor. I love passing. And not only do I love passing, I love getting slick with the pass too.
I do too. So, yep.
Like, I had a couple done on us earlier on the court today, which made me feel good. I had one where I was going up to the right wing. I was going to pull up to shoot and everybody froze and my teammate was still cutting. So like, as I was cutting up, I did a quick dish to the cutter and like, even he almost didn't know it was coming, but it felt nice, man. I did hit a Steph Curry shot from three where like I put it up and as soon as I released it, I was like, that's cash. So I like started walking back the other way and it went in. You feel super cool when stuff like that happens.
I don't think I've made like a jumper beyond the elbow in the flow of a game in like 3 years. Like I'm just getting to the rack at this point. I will say, so this is something else I was thinking about.
You're like what, 6'3"?
I'm 6'5". Yeah.
A 6'5", yeah.
Like
so
a,
I'm
like a real 6'5".
I'm 6 even in shoes for anyone that's curious. I'm six foot even in shoes. And I can do a little bit of post up because where I grew up, it was like small town Arkansas. Six foot is big, you know, how, like single A basketball. But as I started growing up, I started developing like outside game and stuff like that. So
I'm this is embarrassing. Perhaps too embarrassing to do it on the air. I'm thinking about seeing. I was talking to somebody about a prospect the other day who like might be shoot like. A guy there, he's like, I think this guy shoots with the wrong hand, like the Ben Simmons thing. And I was like, do I shoot with the wrong hand? Because I do some stuff left-handed. And I was like, I don't know. We got issues. We got issues.
You got the yips?
We got to shoot. I don't think so. Because I'm really good inside. And I'm ambidextrous around the basket. I just get inside the paint and I make it happen. But like, if I were to play with other guys that are like in equal shape as me, I'd be cooked. And especially if there was like more than two of them that are my same height. Like, if I don't have the height advantage, I'm in trouble. Anyway, actual players that are good at this sport.
Yes.
Let's talk about those. So this is kind of a rescheduled thing. We had a couple things pop up over at the site. So we are recording tonight. No fault of anybody on the No Ceilings team, by the way. Awesome, awesome work. Love our crew. Some awesome stuff cooking behind the scenes. Corey and Albert putting some real cool stuff together. Rucker and Metcalf have been grinding. Super excited for their pod tomorrow covering the new Nikola Topic performances. That's something I'm looking forward to.
And Zachary Richauché.
Yeah, yeah. So exciting stuff coming out from everybody in our crew. But we're going to do some talk of Dalton Connect. We're going to talk a little bit about Cam Christie, and we're going to answer some questions from the sickos. Let's lead off with Dalton Connect because you wrote this really great piece on him this past week here. Came out Tuesday, so very new. If you go to the NoCeilingsNBA.com website, it'll be right at the top. It's fresh, fresh off the presses. I'm going to let you kind of take the lead on this. What were your – you mentioned, we talked about it a little bit the other day on the show.
Yeah.
We were saying, like, I came into this loving Dalton Connect, really like the defense. What were your big takeaways, and what do you want people to know about Dalton's game coming out of that process?
Yes.
Like, scouting him and doing the
art. So just, like – walk people back who may not know. You know, I took like 3 months for the nature of my work. I left around like late December, beginning of January. And I felt like I had a pretty good understanding of like people at the top, right? There was going to be some people lower on my board that I knew were going to come up, but I felt pretty good about the people at the top. And Dalton Connect was one of those people who were easily within my lottery, kind of like mid to late lottery. Come back, watch film. No surprise at all that, you know, this guy who had every step prior to Tennessee, no matter what level of competition that he had like worked his way up to, his productivity and efficiency kind of, you know, rose with him as the level of competition did as well. Right. So when I come back and I start watching that, you know, he was even more dynamic on offense than I remember before I left. He started getting more comfortable doing things off of the bounce, which is pretty impressive whenever you're looking at a guy who, you know, is going to get tagged as a shooter, right? So I'm watching the film. I'm getting ready for diving into him and, like, doing this, like, pretty big piece on him. It's probably one of the more comprehensive pieces I've ever done, especially, like, on a player's, like, ancillary skill sets. And I started coming away really impressed with the driving, you know, the ability to put people, you know, take some people who are similarly built, maybe even a little bit more athletic than he is, taking them to the paint, getting a little bit more physical with them, not just freshmen, but upperclassmen as well. Of course, the shooting was there. But then I started watching the defense, Maxwell. And I know that, you know, our friends at Synergy, you know, they're not the only ones that are susceptible to this. Defensive metrics just across the board, they're really hard to break down, quantify, at face value, yeah. Mm-hmm. And quantify an individual's impact on the defensive end, you know, because how do you give someone a statistic for denying a driving lane or like stopping a dribble altogether before it even, like, it's really hard to do, right? But these defensive metrics typically indicate how successful a team defense is as opposed mm-hmm. to just an individual. And so I'm looking at these numbers. I started getting into the film again on Dalton, and I start seeing, like, this dude is actually, like, in his first year with Coach Barnes, like, really putting an emphasis on defense, is not a lost cause at all. As a matter of fact, I think that he's, like, a pretty positive contributor to this, like, really good volunteer defense. And so I'm watching this, and of course, you know, there's some things that he's got to get better at. You know, he's not going to be able to guard like the quick ones and twos in the mm-hmm. NBA. And I don't mean this as a slight at all. In fact, I think that if you can find a player who is as dynamic on the offensive end as Dont Connect, if he is like the best guard the other wing player, you know, to come out of this class on top of the shooting ability, I think that that's a steal. And I just kept falling in love with the defensive film, and it's not always pretty. It's not always, you know, picture perfect, but a lot of times it's effective because he's grown not only in the ability to defend, but he's also gotten stronger. I think that he's put on like
strong. He's
12 to 13 pounds of between his last season with, you know, Northern Colorado to Tennessee. You know, he put in a lot of work to get a little bit more strong, and that's really helped him. You know, he's not a negative wingspan guy either. He's very athletic too. Not just like the typical sneaky athletic either. You know, he's an actual athlete, and he has all these tools that he's put together. Maxwell, and I know that he's older, right? But I have a hard time believing that this is going to be the best that he's going to be as a basketball player, you know? So I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, man, after 1 year of dedicating a season to getting stronger and becoming a better defender, I'm really impressed with the leaps that he's made, you know, and baking all that together into one, you know, deep dive pie. It's like, why is Dalton Connect not considered a top five prospect? And I know that it's taboo because, you know, he's a super senior. Oh, yeah. He's an old man. You know, he's probably got grandkids by now, but in all seriousness, like, why is this dude not a top five prospect, especially? And we'll talk about this more in a little bit to answer another question that we got. But especially when shooting is such a concern with a lot of the prospects in this class, when even offense alone is a concern for a lot of these top prospects in this class, you got a guy who has proven himself. You have breadcrumbs indicating that he's on an upward trajectory with increased level of competition, that no matter what he sets his mind to, he's going to be able to accomplish it. Like, why is this guy not a top five prospect? And I feel weird for saying it. I'm not trying to be like controversial or anything. Believe what I say, but like, I have him fifth on my board ahead of some guys who, you know, consensus would probably say otherwise.
Yeah. So Portsmouth kind of slowed down some of my like deep dive process, and like, he's the guy next on the docket for me on that. So I'll be able to take a more firm point on that, like, the next time we talk, but I don't think it's completely out of the question. And I think a big part of that gravitates toward his development and how he developed. Yeah. I'm a big believer in these late growth spurt guys. I just am. Like, what we saw with and I'm not saying he's going to be Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams, like, just feel wise was in a different stratosphere as a prospect coming out. But you look at like Jalen Williams, the development that he had, you look at a guy like Ben Shepherd, who is similarly like a late growth spurt guy and is now contributing in the playoffs for the Pacers, had a great game, 8 points off the bench yesterday, three boards. Like, I think some of these guys that come around at a later age and then take that sort of like mid-major path where they're not getting some of the same resources as other guys might just have a little bit more juice to be squeezed out of them. And like, even like Keegan Murray is kind of an example of like, well, he was old, but also like he took this sort of circuitous route and played like 1 year at Iowa before his breakout season. And before that, like he was doing a prep year. Like, I do think there is something to just like guys develop at different paces and some guys develop later. And I think with growth spurts in particular, it can really alter things. For those who don't know, he was 5'4" when he was a freshman in high school and didn't finish growing until he was a freshman in college. So it's a different path for him. I'm with you on the shooting. I think the driving is like really kind of understated to a degree because Tennessee's 3-point shooting was like okay this year. Like they weren't good, they weren't terrible, but then you remove Dalton Knecht from that and suddenly it's a whole lot worse. When Dalton Knecht is driving to the basket, he doesn't have Dalton Knecht to pass to on the perimeter. So when you take him out of the equation, suddenly this is a much worse shooting team. And that's the spacing that he has to operate with when he's the one that's driving to the basket. Posted good half court finishing numbers for like a forward prospect. But like, I really struggle. I understand that he's not like the twitchiest first step guy. And I just have a hard time. Like, is there ever been a guy that had like 25 dunks in back-to-back seasons and people are like, he's just okay athletically. Like some of the comparisons that he gets, like when, like in, like, I, like Max Strus is a popular one. And I completely understand it. I don't think it's a bad comparison, but it's like, we need to acknowledge that there is like a very real difference when it comes to like downhill power, stride length and burst off of 1 foot. Like Dalton Knecht, back-to-back 25 dunk seasons is a meaningful statistic. I love the versatility with the shot. He had to take a lot of dribble pull-ups this year, which like I don't think is going to be his bag in the NBA, but I think he's fine at it. Like I think he was a really good mid-range pull-up guy last year. I think he can do the pull-up three when needed, and it's like not a thing he has to do all the time. But a guy who is 42.3% off the catch, can move into a shot, can run into a shot, is because of that body development that we talked about. He's going to be a guy who can set screens and pop open, which a guy like Isaiah Joe has success with. That Isaiah Joe is like 175 pounds. Like imagine what 215 pound Dalton Knecht is going to do. But let's talk about the defense, because that is like a big concern with him, right? Is like, if he's struggling defensively, what exactly is his ceiling? I think the defense is like fine. Like I think it's got problems. Like I'm not sitting here and like, it's, I love it. Like he has his flaws. The biggest is like, he just doesn't really slide his feet very well. Like he turns and chases too often. He is a little bit like hoppy instead of like sit down and slide. But his chest is really strong. He does a really good job when he throws the body on guys. Because of his bounce, he gets off the floor really well to contest. Good point here by D. Steven as well. His stance is really high. He is too high in his stance. Like he needs to sit down, he needs to slide his feet. Here's the thing: Dalton Knecht chose Tennessee because it was a program that was going to help improve him defensively.
And it did that.
My belief is, I think he got slightly better, but I think with his offensive workload, I think a lot of the developmental focus shifted to other things other than like, we needed to defend. I don't really think that was a focal point for him. And I still think it's something that needs to be keyed in on. And I think it's something that if you talk to teams, even development side people, like they're more worried about like, if you know what's happening on defense and how well you guard the ball. Like NBA teams feel pretty confident in their ability to teach on ball defensive technique. And I think he's going to be able to get better at that as time goes on. My biggest thing with him is like, I don't love his off ball speed on defense. Like I feel like he has a hard time like chasing guys around screen and stuff like that is like my biggest like gripe where I'm like, that's going to be like a thing that's harder to improve. But to your point, like Tennessee, like I'm running the numbers on Hoop Explorer, like a point and a half worse every 100 possessions with him on the court defensively, but like 5 points better offensively. Like he's not a guy that like got killed defensively. Like Tennessee was more than okay defensively when he was on the court. And this is a point from Russell Thomas I've seen quite a bit too. I'm just worried about Knecht because he's a non-playmaking negative defense shooting guard. So first off, I don't think he's a shooting guard. I think he's like a small forward. Like he's big. You could play him at shooting guard. I would like to if I can afford to play jumbo, but I don't. to me, like, look at the role. Like, how efficient can you be taking when you have to take 16 shots per game, often self-created on an SEC team?
I think, like, that he had I think he had over 300 points. He was the leading scorer for Tennessee, and I think it was by like over 300 points, if I'm not mistaken. Like, if for those who have Synergy, you could check that under the cumulative box for whoever you're looking at. I think that he was like over 300 points, which that's a pretty sizable margin in college basketball.
For sure.
That's a significant difference between your second best player, especially considering like Santiago Vescovi. We've talked about this before. His offense has just like gone away. You know, Josiah Jordan James, a guy who's more on the defensive side, even though he has made improvements on the offensive end. Kai Ziegler is mainly perimeter oriented. You know, Adu is strictly around the basket. There's not a lot of offensive, like, you're not watching UConn's offense when you're watching Tennessee play. They're a let's get you in the mud team. And I think that it's kind of similar to what we talked about with Isaiah Crawford, right? Do I think that Dalton Connect is going to be a bad playmaker with better teammates around him? Absolutely not. Like, I don't think that the assist to turnover in anything is numbers or anything that you can really take a whole heck of a lot out of, because it's all contextual.
I'll say too, he posted a career high assist rate and his turnover rate's really low. So like, Dalton Connect is never going to make an advance
incredibly high usage
or do anything crazy. Like, the assist rate compared to the usage, I can understand if you're like, I wish he had more assists. I get it. He doesn't make mistakes.
That's a key.
Yeah, that's important. The fact that he at least knows how to play within himself and can make the next one or like operate a give and go with Jonas Adu really seamlessly in those handoff settings, which is a way that NBA teams are going to use him. Like, he's good at that. And I will say, so his true shooting percentage is close to 58, 53.8 effective field goal percentage. Like, that's better than a lot of like higher usage guys. So if we look at like recent high usage forwards, Tari Eason was in that same ballpark. It's better than Jaylen Brown, Lamar Stevens, Anthony Lamb, lower than Keegan Murray, lower than Siakam, but higher than like Jalen McDaniels. Like, for the usage, it's not bad. It's really pretty solid.
And the other thing too is that I don't want it to be mistaken, because I feel like sometimes, you know, we operate in a world of ones and zeros, right? Where it's either you're on or you're off. I'm not sitting here trying to say that Dalton Connect was a lockdown defender. I'm not saying that like picturesque technique or anything like that. I just find it encouraging that the year, like, again, the school that he chose to go to, the reasoning behind that, he did improve defensively. He did get stronger. Those were two objectives that he had in going to Tennessee, and he met them. And that's, if I am going to bet on a player as an NBA front office, I don't know. I find it a little bit more easy to buy into a guy who has a proven track record of improving over time. And who has said that this is what I wanted to do before he went and done it. Like, before he even touched the court for Tennessee, he says, I want to be a better defender and I want to be stronger. Everyone says that stuff, right? That's good PR stuff, right? He actually went out and did it. And if I'm an NBA front office in a draft where everyone has giant question marks, I'm getting the most proven shooter out of anybody on high volume. And I'm getting a guy who I can believe will put in the work to improve over time. And that's why I'm buying in on Dalton.
Yeah, I think that's completely reasonable. And like, even if like the defense isn't great or if it's bad, like, do you think he could get to like a Pat Connaughton point defensively? Like, another guy who has like,
I think he could be a tools, good team,
like, kind of is like worse than you would expect him to be defensively. Like, I think that's a guy that he could be. Yeah, I think there's just like a lot of like solid outcomes, even if he doesn't hit like the rosiest outcomes. But I do just think there's like a better chance that he's really, really good than people realize. Like, I think that's on the table. Or even a guy like Reggie Bullock. Like, I think like that's an outcome where it's like, maybe this isn't exciting, but like, I don't know. I think his floor is a little higher than people realize is ultimately kind of where I settle. Like, I think they're in most outcomes, unless there's like catastrophic injury, he at least hangs around. Yeah. Cause shooting has that type of value.
Got a question here from Art.
From Art. What do you think about that one?
I mean, he's got the game that, I mean, every team is going to want a shooter, right? Especially with that side, you know, size. I don't know. I feel like Detroit could really use a floor spacer on their team with their roster construction. Washington could stand a benefit from.
I like Toronto a lot too.
Toronto makes a lot of sense too. Grizzlies, Honey Badger in the comments says love Grizzlies and connect. I really believe that too. He doesn't have like the apparent handle that would fit with the OKC, but I think that Oklahoma City, he could be there.
If he fell to Chicago and the Bulls are still doing like their thing where they kind of want to compete, he would be nice because they just like don't have willing shooters on that team. Like
Atlanta makes sense too. Like, I mean, they got a lot of wings, but that's the thing is like this guy is going to. He's going to have, you know, one of those quintessential like 8 to 12 to maybe 15 year long NBA careers because he's got everything in a scoring wing that you could want with the upside to potentially improve as a defender as well. And that's what I see in him too. Sure. Like if he could get to the point to where if he's like your weakest defender, you're not going to get killed. You know?
I think that's ultimately like why I'm bullish on him is like that exact point.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk some Cam Christie, and then we're going to get to your questions.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so I've got an article coming out Monday on Cam Christie that I have not done writing yet. So my opinion on him is not fully solidified. Usually, I feel like the writing process helps you like get the final opinion, but I did all the film work for it. So Cam Christie is the brother of Lakers big Max Christie, also Nolan Meadows. He played in Minnesota this past year, 11.3 on 40.3, 79.1, 79.6 boards, 2.2.
Yeah. Hey, Maxwell, just real quick, man, your audio is kind of cutting in and out. Yeah, while he's doing that, Cam Christie, for those who don't know, freshman wing from University of Minnesota, has pretty good size. Pretty aesthetically pleasing game and plays a little bit more mature than I think, you know, that freshman tag gets him. He's kind of like sneakily hidden from a lot of people. Maxwell, I know that we talked about this before we went on air. I have him 90th on my board, and there's a lot of reasons that I should have him higher. I just don't know how much I want to buy into like maybe two skill sets that I see that he has right now that I think could help him in the NBA. I think that he would benefit from a little bit more time, but I'm sure we're going to talk about this here soon. He's not foregoing eligibility, you know?
For sure. Am I sounding better now, by the way?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay, great, great, great. Sorry about that. Yeah, so Cam Christie has started to pop up like on quite a few mocks.
Yep.
In the second round. Has this nice kind of skill, size, and passing game at 6'6". 2.2 assists to 1.2 turnovers, 39.1% from three. And yeah, like this is a point from Honey Badger. Yeah, like not much difference between him and Kyshawn George. Like that's been a topic of discussion. So Cam Christie, I started my film dive, and like the first thing that really blew me away, I think, was, and I'd obviously watch him a little bit throughout the year, but I had him like 80. Like I was in the same range as you, partially because I just thought he was going to go back to school. Yeah. Was kind of like the vibe I got, like watching him during the course of the season. First thing that stood out is just he's a marvelous shooter. Like,
yes,
really, really good as a shooter. Like the 39.1% on eye volume is like one thing, but like his like pull up mechanics are seamless. Like he's got a gorgeous pull up. He made 40% of his threes as the pick and roll ball handler this last season. Like it is a very, very pretty pull up shot with like no noise involved in the mechanics whatsoever. But the movement stuff, like, so he was a spot up guy a lot of the time, but if you watch him in transition or the few plays where he was coming off a handoff or coming off a screen, he comes to a halt. Like his body control is stellar. Like he is just one of those guys who can run, slam on the brakes, and he has like the most perfectly balanced base you've ever seen before he elevates into a shot. I love the shot. All in on the shot. The passing and playmaking stuff I thought was interesting. So many of his assists going through the film came in transition, which I was a little surprised by, but I do think there's some half court functionality to it. He does a really nice job of just like finding the basic pass. So, like in those ball screens that he would run anytime that like they blitzed or played a more aggressive coverage or aggressive show or whatever, like he did a really good job of just like staying poised and then using his length to find a good passing angle to make the safe pass either to a big or to a spot up shooter. Like I thought he did a very nice job of just like staying under control and not trying to do too much and he got some easy ones off that. We'll get to the big concern in a moment. Let's talk about the defense. So his defensive metrics like kind of stink, like 1.2 steal percentage, 1.1 block percentage. The defense was way better than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
Like does a really nice job of like using his hips, slides his feet pretty well when he's engaged. Like he pays attention really well. I was shocked how many plays like he disrupted around the basket where maybe it's not a block, but it's like, oh, he like got into position with that tag and prevented a really easy pass, or like he knew to help at the basket and force someone to miss. Like not a ton of, and like a lot of tip passes that didn't lead to steals. Like there was a lot of stuff where I was like, oh, he knows where to be on defense. A lot of my concerns come back to athleticism in his body. He's on the skinny side right now. And I think part of his issues defensively are that he's like not particularly quick when it comes to recovery and changing direction in space. So sure. Like there were some plays where if there's like a lot of rotations going on and then he has to go one way and then another, that directional change isn't very twitchy. It's a little slow. It's not clunky. Like there's fluidity to it, but he's not one of those guys who can just like pop, explode off his foot. And now he's zooming the other direction. Physically, some of the bigger guys that he matched up with were able to just kind of like push him under the basket, which is going to be a problem if he stays in the draft. Yeah. Like he could fill out in time, but like he's probably going to be a little bit behind that curve, like just permanently. Like he's just not one of those guys with like an awesome, sturdy build. Like he's probably going to be at a strength deficit against a lot of players in the NBA. Where this is the biggest problem is his finishing. Steven, what percent do you think Cam Christie shot at the basket in the half court this season?
44%.
36.4%.
I'm not too far off.
That's
awful though.
That's really bad. That is
anemic. Yeah.
That is like to call that a red flag would be a disservice to the color red. Like, that is, that's severe.
Yeah. So, the crimson, like the brightest, like fluorescent neon, like wake you up out of your sleep.
Yeah. So, and he doesn't get there very often, which is like one thing I noticed with his handle. It's like, he has that Jet Howard, like rhythm and rock, like with the handle where like, he's always really balanced. Like he can get into his pull up really well. He can create space east, west or backwards, but like, it's never downhill. And like, it's kind of, he doesn't want to go there. At times it looks like he's almost playing a little scared around the basket. Like he has some times where he doesn't really anticipate the rim help enough. Other times where he's overly anticipating the rim help, he'll take off from too far away and try to lob something up because he doesn't want to meet contact at the rim, or he will meet contact and just doesn't have the power through his lower half or his core to like go up in a seamless way or rise through contact. It's pretty rough. So there have been some sub 50% rim finishers, and a couple of them kind of fit his profile. So if you want to like be optimistic, you got Luke Kennard, Cam Thomas, Gary Trent Jr., and Moses Moody. We're all sub 50% rim finishers. None of them were sub 40% rim finishers. but do you know who was a sub 40% rim finisher?
Out of those four that you just listed?
Out of somebody else currently in the NBA.
I could go a lot of different ways on this.
It would be his brother, Max Christie, who made 37.9% of his field goal attempts at the rim at Michigan
State. See, that actually kind of makes sense.
So Max Christie, he's not, you know, lighting the world on fire, but he was an everyday player for the Lakers this year. That's something. Yeah. So I where I'm at with him is I love the shooting. Like the shooting tape and the way that he's able to move into a shot reminded me
put on a clinic.
I know we're talking a lot about Ben Shepherd, and maybe I'm just really excited that he had a good playoff game yesterday. Reminds me a lot of Ben Shepherd. Reminds me a lot of just like his ability to run, be high work rate, set his feet, and get that sucker off. Like, I like that. I like his decision making with the ball. I like his handle. I do not like that he doesn't get downhill. I don't like that he's this bad of a finisher. And like, Max is like still a bad finisher in the NBA. Yes. He's not horrific, but he's not good. And like the strength is going to be a problem on defense. So if you're drafting him, you've got to understand like this isn't just like a quick project. Like this isn't a guy who's going to contribute next year. Even like Max Christie's contributed this year. But like I wouldn't have been surprised if the Lakers had like tried to find moves to get somebody else in that spot. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's, if you're drafting this guy in the second round, I think you can feel okay about it just because like you're getting a shooter who really knows how to play basketball and is 6'6". Like there are worse guys that you could have. And as like Ardo says here, like I couldn't agree with this more. Like jumper heavy guys without the ability to get shots at the rim is a pretty common archetype in the NBA and not a massive issue for a second rounder IMO. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, I think if you want this type of player, you can get it with Cam Christie and you just got to be patient and wait for it to work. I'm not like sprinting to the podium to draft him in the first round. Like it would take some weird stuff and like him destroying the combine for me to take him in the first. Like I'm just not like super excited about him, but I think he's good.
So let's have this conversation then, because I got two ways that two dynamics about the situation that you just painted, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty tantalizing guy, late riser, kind of late into the season. We see this all the time, you know, especially freshmen, especially young, kind of unproven talent. Maybe we tap into this, right? And kind of seeing the same thing with Orris Chomchi, right? Mm-hmm. Here's a problem that I have with, and I get it's like at some point, you know, the odds of these players making it go down substantially outside the lottery. It goes down even I get all of that, right? But still have to try to make these players work, right? So here's my thing. If it's going to take years for this guy to get ready and he's not a first round guy, then you have to take him in the third or in the second round. Problem with that is the contract, right? Mm-hmm. Because you only get 3 years to get this guy right. Do you think that Cam Christie is ready to contribute year three?
My gut says yes, but it also wonders like how valuable is this type of player, like truly. You know what I mean?
Where I'm glad you said that, because let's say he is ready by year three.
Okay.
Contract's up. Now you got to pay him. What are you going to pay the guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, is another team going to, like, and that's the issue that I have with taking these like projecty players that admittedly we all know are not going to be NBA ready. Like there are going to be people who are more physically ready to handle the NBA grind. Like let's say Christian Coloco out of Arizona is another great example, who was like physically ready to see the NBA floor, actually played year one, second round player, proven guy. You're going to have to pay him a little bit more quickly. That's fine. But you're taking these second round guys, and if he is ready to play by year three, then you have to sign him to an extension, and then you have to deal with the contract too. Like, are you going to be able to get him on like one of these crazy Isaiah Joe deals where he's like,
or are you paying him like Gary Trent money?
Exactly. And then it's not high enough to like really bring in like an amazing player. So you kind of have to package him with multiple people. And then that turns into, okay, well, if I think he's going to be ready by year three and I like his player type, then I got to take him in the first round, which means that now you got that extra long runway. But if he doesn't work out, then that's even more time that you got to invest into this guy, right?
Yeah.
So there's aspect.
You can do, because you can do the 4-year non-guarantee now in the second round. But I think that also turns into then like, does he want that? Does the agent want that? Like, that's where you get into like the second round steering politics thing, which,
And that's the other question and that was going to be the other approach that I gave you. Like, now I got, like, that's the team's approach. Now let's go to the player approach.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Cam Kersey wants to potentially be a second round guy or potentially undrafted this year? Like, there's a lot that pays into
Sure. But I don't know.
Probably not. I mean, I think him coming back with this player type and like improving on this year
and just getting stronger, which is like a relatively, I don't want to say like a relatively easy thing to do, but it's like a pretty straightforward mission. It's not like he's got to figure out how to dribble and he's got to figure out how to shoot and he's got to get better at this. Like, it's really just like get stronger and figure out your rim finishing, which like a guy like, and this isn't an NBA player, but like think about like the strides Jaden Nunn has made as like a finisher, as a guy who like came into college really skinny. Like it's, we've seen guys do it.
Yeah, Marcus Sasser, another one who was long college career guy, got stronger over time, great handle, great shot, got better at getting downhill over time, right? Mm-hmm. So, and look at him now in the NBA. So my thing is like, if I'm Cam Christie and I'm a good 6'6", and I look that daggum nice on film and I have a wet jumper, I could come back in a year, maybe even two, and be an undeniable first round talent. Like, that's, if I'm true. Already
his
on,
skill set's not gonna lose boards, its value. Yeah.
No, not at all.
Because if you were a raw athlete, it would almost be different. Because it's like, I need somebody to bet on the idea of me being young and raw. Where it's like the opposite with Cam Christie. It's like you're betting on the skill set, which like isn't gonna go anywhere.
No, not at all. And I'm not saying no intel at all, but like Minnesota just lost their big man, right? Like that, who knows what he does to like make that happen. But if I'm Cam Christie, I would want to come back. I would want to come back and improve and be higher on boards, because I would bet on him. Like, if he comes back, he'll probably be a first round guy for me. Right. Just putting that down. There's only like 13 freshmen on average in every draft class ago. And this next draft class is loaded with freshman talent, right? That everyone's like oogling over. On average, only like 13. I think in the past like 5 years, like 15 were taken in the first round, something like that. There's a lot of spots for a guy like Cam Christie to like work himself up into being a first round talent next year.
I agree. I still think going back would probably be best for his like basketball career long term. Like, just ensure that you will be the man, you'll get whatever development you want in college, and then just like come into the NBA a little bit more physically ready. Because it's really tough. Like, it's really tough for these shooters that like don't have the girth to like be screeners or like go downhill or whatever. Like, if he's chased off the line right now, like, he's just not a threat, like, period, point blank. And like, that's tough. So, I think that'll put a bow on the Camp Christie talk. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with a few of your questions. Stick with us. All right, let's get these questions going. I want to take this first question from our good friend Nathaniel Miller. Is there any aspect of draft analysis you're striving to write about with more clarity and depth? Is there any mention like shooting versatility being one of those possible topics? Steven, anything that you've been like having this kind of stewing in your brain that you've wanted to explore at all lately?
So, Maxwell, you're like my guy, right? And you get the benefit of hearing me probably more times than anybody should ever want to. So with that, I thank you first off. Secondly, I recently bounced like this thing that I wanted to talk about. And I actually just talked about it with Nick, our editor, because I was kind of running the idea by him. I want to make sure that the piece that I'm working on is good. But I was walking my dog the other day, as one does, as I'm walking my dog, I'm like, I don't know what, like how shooting really impacts how teams draft. You know what I mean? So like, I'm working on a piece that kind of work that is closely related to what Nathaniel talked about. And that's something that I do want to get better at, right? Like, because I feel like all of us at No Ceilings, right? We all do a really good job of putting in the time, effort, research, getting intel, and we can scout the heck out of some basketball players, right? Like, and you know, I love our team and I believe in our team. We can scout the heck out of some basketball players, but one thing that I myself as a writer want to get better at is getting more into like these think pieces. I don't want to get galaxy brain, right? Like,
sure, yeah.
I don't want to. Exactly. And I don't want to try to make myself sound like the smartest guy in the room, because more times than not, I'm just not that guy. Right. But there are some things that I think about a lot. And one of them, I am working on a piece that should be out sometime next week. And it does involve shooting, and it does involve like how teams perceive shooting when they like historically have shown that they perceive shooting when it comes to top talent draft classes. And I think that people are going to be pretty surprised by what they come across in this article, because I think there's such a perception of the league right now, and draft history doesn't really show what I think like the consensus thought process is when it comes to like drafting and shooting and stuff like that. So this is just one of the steps that I'm taking though, Nathaniel, to improve on like some of these like kind of conceptual philosophical think pieces, doing it in such a manner that's like accessible, right? Like I want to sound intelligent, right? Like I don't think anybody who writes wants to sound like an idiot,
but still easy enough that anybody could read it.
Bingo. That's what I'm after.
Yeah. I have a hard time with like think pieces because I am like I'm a real rabbit hole person. Like I will just go down a rabbit hole, and then like I'm going down five other rabbit holes, which like the small guard article that I wrote was probably like the biggest example of that, where I was like, what's the percentage like small guards that make it? Then that turned into like every position group. And then that turned into like, well, what about this relative to that? Like the small guard article is probably my favorite thing I've ever written. And it's also like the most research I ever did for a piece. Like it was a lot of work.
You want to answer the questions before they get asked. Like that's what I find myself doing.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I want to be like a step ahead of the curve in identifying these trends. I feel like a trend that I talked about in that article that I don't think has properly been reckoned with really is like the whiff rate of the not quite wing archetype. Like these guys that are like 6'4", 6'5". Like for a long time in my head, I was always like 6'4" is an inconvenient height. Like 6'4" is an inconvenient height. Like it's just a tough height to be in the NBA. I think the next thing I want to do is a not quite wing article, like along those lines, because it is just like a type of player that we see teams like whiff and whiff and whiff on. I'd like to do something about the misconception around big men. I think that's correcting itself. We had a couple really terrible big man drafts, and I think it like broke people's brains. Like, I think it made people like, you shouldn't draft a big guy. You should only draft a big guy in the second round. Like, a big man needs to meet these like 8 criteria to be taken in the first round. It's like,
just go get him anywhere.
We just had a couple of really bad big man classes in a row, and like, we're still trying to like correct the record for like, it's okay to draft a big man high. And I also think we need to move on from like, I think bigs have just been tasked with so much more defensively that like, we're not in the era of like 2009 where you can just like find a 7-foot guy and play them at center. Like, the replacement level to be like an actually good big man is a lot higher than it used to be. And to like, just not get your team killed, it's a lot harder than it used to be. And I think there's been some misunderstanding of that. So like, the not quite wing piece and like the big man piece are like the two that I really want to explore and dive into at some point. I'd also really like to get to like, I've had this idea in my head too, for like what I call like the bad shooter article, where it's just like taking guys that have been bad shooters that figured it out, and then like exploring like, what was it? Cause I feel like that is something that like, everyone's like, that's like free throw percentage, or some people like, it's touch, or like some sort of like nebulous term. And like, we don't, I feel like we, no one's really tried to get to the bottom of that as hard as they should. So like, those are the three that I'd really like to explore at some point. And I probably will next year.
I got two things that I want to tag on that one.
Yeah.
Especially with the big men, I feel like big men now, because of what the Golden State Warriors playing Draymond Green at center was able to do, was to like, you have to be switchable as a big man.
Yeah.
And I think that you do have to have some ability, right? Like, to not be complete toast to go out on the perimeter as a big man. Like, if you find yourself out there, like, you can't just like trip over your shoelaces, you know what I mean? But like,
yeah.
I think the importance that we put on big men, like having to be able to be classified as like switchable. I just don't know. Like, if I don't think that that's necessarily as important as like what people are making that out to be.
I,
you know,
drop is still like what most teams play. And I got like, I remember like 2 years ago, I got yelled at on Twitter by a lot of people. Cause I was like, hey, like, here's the starting center, like the last like 6 NBA title teams. And like most, if not all of them, played like a drop big as a starting 5. And a lot of people were like, no. Like, it doesn't matter, because like, those guys weren't in the closing lineup. And like, my point was that like, the points that you score at the start of the game count equally to the ones that you play that go in at the end of the game. So if a player is providing you value in the playoffs, it doesn't necessarily like, it shouldn't be a death knell on an entire player archetype, because they're not closing the game. Like, you're still getting playoff minutes out of a drop center. Like, I feel like there was a massive overcorrection on that, and I think we're still kind of reckoning with it a little bit, where I think guys that are like toolsy but undersized but like are theoretically switchable and maybe not even really switchable, like, I think still get
a real fan.
Yeah, I think guys like that still kind of get a little bit more attention than they should relative to like other guys that should, like, can do the center stuff. And speaking of guys that do the center stuff, let's actually like lead this into the next question, if that's cool, or did you have something else?
No. Go ahead.
So this question was from Greg Williams. I've been thinking about Enfali Dante at 44 for Houston. Is that too high for him? Is he another drop big, or can he do more? I think that we just said like, there's nothing wrong with being a drop big. I do think he's more though. Like, in my comment about him, like, his steal rate is exceptional for a center. Like, he's really good using his hands, like, baiting guys into mistakes, getting – I've never seen a big in college get into as many handles as Enfali Dante did. I understand there's, like, medical concerns. I get it. Like, he's not a great passer. Like, whatever. I just see, like, what Trey Jemison did in Memphis this year is, like, a guy who came in on a two-way and just, like, held down the fort, didn't do anything fancy. And I'm like, Enfali Dante can do that. Like, I love him in the second round, especially for teams that are like a little bit more serious about like getting a guy that can give them minutes if they need to in the first year. I love Enfali Dante in that kind of a situation.
So I'm lower. I don't have him in my top 60. I do like him though. And I think, you know, I've been seeing some stuff to where it's like, you know, sometimes like draft people could be too optimistic, and sometimes like we can love players that we have like well down our boards who might not even.
Yeah. I think that's fair too. Cause like, sometimes you'll get like a thing of like draft comps, and it's like, I've got this guy 60th on my mock, and my player comp for him is PJ Washington. And it's like, whoa, yeah. If you think that guy's PJ Washington, take him a little bit, take him a little bit higher.
Collins are a whole another.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. Like, you spend time with people and suddenly you kind of like them more. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And like, the more that like I scout players, the more I'm like, okay, like this player is endearing. Like, maybe down the long term, they could be a two-way contract guy, you know? Like, and that's what teams want to see. But I like Imfale. There's a few centers that I actually need to update my board because I have some people who are not even I don't know, we'll see, because the deadline for early entries is still open. So once that's closed out, I'll be able to like narrow down my board a lot more. But I have him in a range where I wouldn't be surprised if I have him kind of like in that top 80 frame by the end of it, like priority undrafted guy. Yeah. And there's a lot to like, man. And here's the thing too, is like, Max, we talk about this all the time. When you get to a certain range on a board, like the number is like super arbitrary. It's like a range that you like, that you could see things breaking right for them. And like, unfortunately, like you have to stack them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's like a tier.
It's tough to do this in a void where it's like, I don't know, I'd like certain players way better for the Celtics than I would for the Trailblazers. But like, I'm making this board for the internet. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not making this board for a team. So that's like a really tricky component. I've always found, if like trying to make a board in our shoes, it's like, I'm not making this for anything. Like it's in a void.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I mean, like, and that's when we go down to where I think Fit Elm team weighs into people's board rankings a lot too. It's like, how many teams could this player like go and lace up for and not be trash tomorrow? You know what I mean? So like, I don't know. I could see Dante like contributing to a team like that. My ranking is not probably not indicative of that, but like, there's absolutely a world where Imfale Dante contributes to an NBA team, and I've been wrong before, you know? So
One question we've gotten asked quite a few times here. This one's from Andrew. Who should the Rockets be targeting with the 8th overall pick? Anybody that you really like for Houston? I kind of like the guards for them. Like, I kind of like I don't know. I don't like Topic there necessarily, because like, I think it compounds some of the spacing and like defensive
problems. Probably won't be there, but
No, probably not. But like,
I think top three all year.
I think Reed Sheppard's really interesting there, because it's like, you can play him, like him, Amen, Cam, Jabari, or like even you throw Tari. Like, there's like all these different amalgamations of their young guys that you can play around Şengün that just really make sense to me from like a ball movement, floor spacing, and defensive perspective. Like, that's the guy Reed I would love Reed there.
I think Reed is kind of like, if you have to pick a 6'3" guard tomorrow, like out of this class, like he's clearly the answer.
Okay.
In my opinion, because he feels safer out of any of these guys, because he shot like 50% on threes like all year long, posted up ridiculous block and steal percentages all year long, like rebounds, like he checks all the NBA boxes that you want to see from these guards. Now, let's say that like he won't be available. I think a lot of people like Rob Dillingham a lot. See, I like the Jared McCain fit a lot more for him than I like Rob Dillingham, because I think Rob is going to be on a team and he's going to want to, or a team drafting Rob is probably going to want to let him do more with the ball in his hand. Whereas Houston already has, you know, Şengün, they have Thompson, Jaylen, they got Fred VanVleet, they got Jaylen, you know, that Cam Whitmore is probably going to want touches. They got Jabari to feed too. So I think that there's already enough ball handling there. And Jared McCain had just showed you that he is a great off the ball guard who is sturdy enough, I think, to weather the NBA. And he's not like, I think he'd be like a good one position defender, which is all you really would need him to do on that team. And again, reliable floor spacer, man. And I think that he's got better passing ability than he was able to show at Duke. You know, Duke's offense drives me crazy, but I think that he fits Houston a little bit more than a Rob Dillingham, even though Rob has probably got like the highest offensive, like self-generated offensive upside probably out of all three of those players.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for like him in some of those lineup fits too, where it's either him, Amen, or like Shingun, where it's like he can, if you're worried about like the playmaking stuff with him, he might not have to do a ton of it. So I definitely think there's some value to that as well. Wouldn't hate like Connect there if they do go crazy and like make a move. Like if there is some sort of like roster shakeup for whatever reason, I wouldn't hate him. I'd shake right now. You've just got so many, like you've just got a glut of forwards, but I think he's a guy that could make sense there too. Yeah. And like, this is another point too from Honey Badge Recommend, makes me a lot less worried about how small Rob is. Like, yeah, I think that's the idea. I think my concern is then like the Rob, Jalen, Shingun lineups.
They got to figure the five out.
And then like size wise, that's like scary. And not in a good way. Yeah.
Like Amin, I love Amin. I think that he is like, he has so done cool. such a fantastic job. Like he's probably one of like the coolest gadget players in all the NBA right now. My thing with Houston, with Rob, would be who's the ball getting funneled to? Because like Jabari Smith Jr., love him. Absolutely adore him. He's not a five. Like if Donovan Klingon would be freaking awesome on this team. You know what I mean? And like,
Do you have enough spacing at that point though? Cause then it's like Klingon, Shingun, and then potentially like,
Like
there's the lineups where it's just like a very precarious, like Jenga tower that you're building with this roster.
Yeah, and Artos brings up a good point here too, is that Shingun is a great player, but he makes roster building such a balancing act. And like he does get like the Yoka comparisons because he is like he's a really good passer, is one of the things I appreciated about him the most when he was coming into the NBA. But the thing is like Yoka, like, and we're seeing it in the playoffs right now, is like he's improved so much on the defensive end. And it's showing that like
he's bigger height, too. Like he's
height and strength make a big difference. Yeah. For your ability to improve on the defensive end. Even if Shingun gets to be like respectable on the defensive end, he's not like scaring anybody away or like not, I don't know. There's going to be people with who are bigger at his position, let's say.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Well, I think that, were there any other questions? I think that was it.
That's all that I got, man.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you guys. Oh man, favorite first. Real quick, we'll do a rapid fire on this one because my wife's gonna get the baby monitor out of our bedroom.
Oh no!
Each of y'all's favorite first fringe first round combo guard.
That's Hunter Silas easily. I have him 21 on my board.
Okay. Jared McCain's not fringe first round anymore, is he?
No.
I don't like combo guards. Like I don't have a lot of them. Let me pull up my last board because I have an update.
Tyler Kolek?
I don't really like Tyler Kolek that much.
Get out of here. AJ Johnson.
I don't like AJ Johnson either.
Get out of here.
I'm going to steal your answer.
AJ Mitchell?
I'll say Hunter Salas. AJ Mitchell, I need to do more work on just because I caught him on bad games. And then would you be surprised if Tristan Da Silva gets drafted before Cody Williams? That's a fun question. I wouldn't put the odds at like 2-1. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's going to happen. But I think there's like a 3% chance that it happens. I don't even know.
I would say
like 2%. Somebody's going to swing on Cody.
I would be surprised. It wouldn't surprise me though if Da Silva ended up being the better player than Cody. And I love
him. I think that's possible. Yeah. I think some of the Cody outcomes are. There's some data red flags on Cody for sure. So
absolutely.
That'll do it. Steven, anything you want to plug?
No, man, just NoCeilingsNBA.com, NoCeilingsNBA on YouTube. We've got a lot of great stuff working. I know that Corey and Albert just did another fantastic film breakdown. Those dudes stay working. I know that all of our stuff is like, we're getting a lot of support. And D. Stevens in the chat says, thanks, y'all. Have a good one. D, thank you. Thank everybody that's watching. I love seeing how much interaction that we've been getting. I love the audience, man. Y'all are beautiful. I love the Sicko Nation, man. I love Sicko Nation.
Yeah, you guys are the best, especially joining us like on an unconventional night, too. We really appreciate it. Thank you guys for joining us. Steven, thank you for hopping on last second and making this work so we could fill the spot. Huge, huge thank you to Steven for covering a player interview that couldn't take place. So, thank you all. Follow me at Boundboard. Follow us at No Ceilings NBA. And we will see you all the week after this next one.
Yes. Much love, y'all.